Hey there. Welcome to another Tesla Motors Club podcast. My name is Lewis.
I'm Doug.
I'm Mike.
Today's episode, we're going to talk about the Cybertruck drama around rusting. Is it or isn't it? Rivian still losing money, doing layoffs again, all kinds of drama there, all that and more. Episode number 60 starts now. Gentlemen, welcome. We're back.
We're back. We are.
Everything good? Nothing new, nothing crazy.
Well, I'm not sure I'd go that far.
I would like to give a little update. A couple episodes ago, we talked about my wireless access point.
We did.
As Seb said, we got a nice little lesson on Wi-Fi antennas or whatnot. But anyway, that's been working really well for me. I just wanted to let folks know.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
It was a simple little project, and it just really is a quality of life thing. I'm not worrying about my car. It got an update without me having to spend time in it with my phone tethered and whatnot. Also, just connecting to my car is a lot faster. I did learn something, though. It seems that the car, when it sleeps, it disconnects from Wi-Fi. Just by looking at the clients on the access point, when I first connect to it, it does it over the cellular network, and then it wakes up the Wi-Fi connection. But yeah, just me connecting to my car is so much faster instead of me sitting there when I just want to warm my car up before I go out to it or whatever.
Sure.
So yeah.
You reminded me, Doug, I wanted to get my FSD back in the middle of a trip. And I'm literally on a snow-covered mountain with my phone tethered to my car, praying I can download the update. About midway through, I'm thinking, this probably isn't one of my smarter ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's rough.
So don't do updates when you're not at home. Now Doug can do updates while he is at home.
That's right.
That's what I got from Mike. Don't do updates when you're not at home.
Doing the updates on the road is fine. But doing that 8,000 feet with spotty cellular is probably not the best idea.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for my FSD 12 update, but hopefully we'll get to that soon.
Well, you need that mobile Starlink, right?
Yeah.
That's what will get you connected.
Put it on the roof.
Yeah. Or just have it ready.
So I don't think we talked about this before, but Starlink, SpaceX, I was totally surprised. Did you see their financials?
No, I did not.
SpaceX last year now actually makes more money from Starlink than from doing rocket launches.
Oh, seriously?
Yes. They made $2 billion or so from rocket launches, and they made over $3 billion from Starlink. My mind was blown. I was like, wow, that business grew.
Well, volume. It's the wonders of volume. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
SpaceX has more launches than whole nations combined, right?
Yes. And yet most of their profitability comes out of them doing their satellite internet. So that's really cool.
That was the whole goal of Starlink anyway. Here's a profitable business that we can do for SpaceX. There's been talk of spinning it off. I don't know if they're going to do that or not.
Yeah.
It makes some sense, but SpaceX having direct access to that capital within the company is probably a good thing, particularly as Starship takes longer to happen.
And I do personally know several people that use it as internet from where they live, and they love it. So from a user standpoint, supposedly it's quite good.
Okay.
So let's jump into today's actual topic.
Yeah, the real topics.
Okay, Cybertruck, oxidizing, the rust. What's going on there? We didn't really touch on it until more info came out. This story originally broke a few weeks ago. People accusing Cybertrucks of rusting, basically pointing out like, oh, you don't paint them. Well, you're idiots. There's a reason you paint cars. Part of it is to protect it from rusting and things like that. But now, since we've given it some time, there'd been a response from a Tesla engineer. There's been some conversations. Elon chimed in very briefly, and they're claiming it's not the car rusting. So what are your thoughts on this, Mike?
Well, if I have to carry around a bottle of Barkeeper's Friend to clean my truck, there's something on there. You can have rust in the technical term, which is oxidation, or you can have rust, which is something that's a contaminant that looks and feels and kind of gritty like the real thing. I don't care. Mm-hmm. The fact that I have to use a bar cleaner on my truck to keep it clean, that's a bit much.
Yeah, so that was basically the recommendation, right?
Seems to be that pretty much everybody is settling on that as an effective way to keep the panels clean without doing damage. Gets the fingerprints off, keeps the sheen even, all that good stuff.
So what are people seeing? Like you look on the Cybertrucks, right? The stainless steel panels. And what they were seeing is little specks.
Speckles.
Speckles of rust. So it's not like you have the rusting section. It's more of just speckles. And the argument from this engineer, and I guess some could say from Tesla, like Elon, agreed with the statement and responded on the tweet. This is all on a Twitter thread. They essentially said it's not the car that's rusting. It's particulates that are on the surface that are looking like rust or even could be rusting depending on what they are. But it's not the panel itself rusting.
So you could argue that. This is something that pops up in detailing all the time. It's iron contamination in paint. The iron particles will fall out of the sky, land on the paint, and embed themselves into the paint. And you buy chemicals that you spray on the paint to basically dissolve the iron and get rid of it. You would expect these particles to fall off the stainless. I mean, there's nothing that they should be able to embed themselves into, but apparently with the surface the way it is, that satin scratch finish, there's all kinds of places for this stuff to embed itself.
Yeah, I would think on a microscopic level, there's actually quite a bit of surface area. So yeah, small specks would have some place to sit and embed.
Well, at a normal paint job, you'd wax it. And the wax seals and helps prevent that. But since you're not waxing your stainless or even sealing it that I'm aware of, I haven't seen a stainless sealer.
A normal car produced, and most cars, they're not stainless, but they're steel. They're dipped in some electrolytic process and they are kind of
sealed.
So I think there's plenty of places for things to sit and nucleate.
I think after a Cybertruck goes through a season of winter back east with all the salt on the roads and some serious contamination, it'll be interesting to see what shows up. Right now, it's just incidental crap falling out of the air.
What also came out is in the manual for the vehicle.
Who reads the manual?
Well, I mean, in this case, it's basically making you responsible.
It is.
It says, wipe off contaminants immediately. If bird poop or whatever.
Right, like bird crap. Get it off right away.
Yeah, we all try to do that, but sometimes it's just not practical. I'll be interested to see Dirty Tesla's Dirty Tesla when he finally gets his Cybertruck. And if he just lets it sit, he doesn't like to wash his car.
Yeah, it's true. He makes a point of it.
Maybe it will all even out into a healthy patina, as they say, right?
Well, the other thing I've seen on the Cybertruck Reddit threads is mismatch in panel tones. The panels get a different shading to them. And again, this barkeeper's friend seems to be the magic touch to even all that out. But I'm wondering what's happening to the metal where it gets this different tone relative to another adjacent panel. I mean, is it oxidation? Is it just contamination? Don't know.
Is it a different batch of steel? Is it slightly different metallurgically?
It could be. I mean, I would expect as much.
They're going to need to bin the panels like they do LEDs.
Oh, God.
Yeah. To get the exact color.
That's right.
They could do that, right? As they cut it up into panels, do a little optical inspection, and okay, these are the ones that are closest in hue, and bend those together.
Well, some of the manufacturing videos, because back to your point, is I see them punching panels out, but they tend to punch out a given panel per spool of metal. Mm-hmm. And then they get the next spool, then they punch a different panel. So if there are variations in the manufacturing of the seal, then yes, you're right. I could easily see different graduations of shading.
Yeah, I mean, you hope it's not that, right?
I doubt it.
I mean, one of the goals of manufacturing, I guess most anything, is minimizing variation.
You're talking the raw material here.
I doubt that the material, I mean, it's possible, but I would imagine it's most likely dust, pollen, whatever. Take your pick.
That's serious pollen.
I've seen it on cars. Like, I definitely feel like contaminants will make it look like it could have a different shade or be different colored depending on what it is. And you're going to hear about the scenarios where somebody's like, oh my God, this is different. Or you're going to notice that thing that stands out. This happens on every car. There was a video of a white car that's painted where they zoomed in and showed similar contamination.
I wonder how much is this is the halo effect from the Cybertruck. There's such a high expectation that goes with this truck that people are looking at the microscopic level. To Elon's point about, what was it, 10 micron accuracy he wanted?
Yeah, well, definitely a big part of it is irony. It's like, okay, here's this thing, the stainless steel. And you look at the headlines and then also the thumbnail images. Hopefully we didn't do it, but we'll see. Like all the thumbnail images on various videos, well, they'll show a Cybertruck and it looks like it's rusted to hell. The whole thing is orange. That's not what people are actually seeing at all, right? It's just little spots you really have to get close up on.
The pictures I've seen on X were little tiny spots. I mean, small spots that you had to zoom in to see.
Probably if you had some Scotch-Brite, you just wipe it out. It's probably overblown. I am really interested in a year, 2 years, cars that are in the Northeast that get a lot of salt.
Harsh environment.
I'll be curious to see how that goes because it has big implications, right? DeLorean back in the, I guess that car came out in 81.
80s, yeah.
The prototype was in 76, I think, and then the first car is 81 or so. But you don't hear too much about them having trouble. You hear about using a little bit of Scotch-Brite or whatever and maintaining it. But there's probably a reason most of the industry is not doing this. And it's typically because it's more expensive for some reason, right? Even though there are more steps, maybe it's cheaper to actually just take a car and you dip it
at
the body in white and you paint it. And so for Tesla, you really hope, or I'm sure they really hope, that this ends up being a cheaper process, especially since they like to redo things from the ground up. And it will have some implications, like that future car, that Model 2 or whatever we're talking about. If they're able to do that stainless steel, that would be interesting. So we'll see. You know, another open question is crash worthiness of the vehicle.
We've seen two crashes so far. At least I've seen two postings. One was the Toyota that happened on a month ago. There was a recent crash where a Dodge Ram rear-ended
a Dodge Ram. Would you say rammed?
A Dodge Ram rammed a Cybertruck.
Yeah.
And as you can see in the picture, left a very pretty image. We got a tweaked bumper. The bumper's definitely tweaked, but the tailgate might be tweaked. It's kind of hard to say.
Now, you know what? That's one of those things where you say, that'll just buff right out. I actually think that will buff right out.
I think most of it probably would.
How did the Ram do?
Not so much.
Well, but...
Crumple zone.
Crumple zones, right? It's supposed to smash up like that so the occupant doesn't experience as much acceleration and jerk.
It's crumpled. You got an entire front end kicked back to the motor, it looks like. So that's probably a total. It's an older Ram. If I'm judging the oxidized headlight covers, it's probably been around a while.
The question for the Cybertruck, in the crash test that they showed, I didn't feel like there was much space for actual crumple zone. It seemed to more shatter than crumple. The main goal is reducing the amount of energy transferred into the passenger cell. And then the other thing is pedestrian safety. And if we think about this cheaper car, which would hopefully become ubiquitous, you would need it to really be good about pedestrian safety and all the sharp edges on this thing.
So speaking of edges, I want you to look at this picture of the rear of the Cybertruck closely. It's been hit pretty hard. And yet the gaps on the tailgate are still intact. The taillight is intact. Aside from the mark on the stainless steel panel and the bumper, you'd never know it was hit.
Yeah.
It's impressive. I'll give him that.
Well, as Elon said, in any highway argument, the Cybertruck will win. Is that how he put
it? Well, so far.
From a safety standpoint, you basically want everyone to drive giant marshmallows, right? You don't actually want these metal.
Yeah, you don't want these big, heavy, hard things. You want the front end to be a lump of clay that just serves.
You'll be the marshmallow getting tossed around on the inside.
I wonder how much did Cybertruck essentially get to benefit from the fact that all the other vehicles on the road are designed with crumple zones and things like that. Is it going to turn into, well, your worst accident is a Cybertruck with a Cybertruck, right? That's going to be the worst scenario for a driver.
Is that like Zeno's paradox? Is that what that was?
Yeah. Like a Cybertruck colliding with another Cybertruck will probably be your worst accident.
The unstoppable object against the unmovable object?
Yes, exactly.
I'm sure there was an episode of Knight Rider about that one.
Yeah. Hopefully they take some learning from this, because you don't want the energy transferring to your brain that's slamming into your skull, right? Mm-hmm. Like you want the car to crumple to take some of that force. I would love to see actual NHTSA testing of the crashing, but...
They haven't done it yet, have they?
Yeah, they don't have to. They don't require testing every new model.
The other thing is that the Cybertruck is still a relatively rare beast. There are only so many on the road given the current production rate. So if it was a Toyota Corolla, right? I mean, obviously that one's getting done because there's so many on the road. So.
Right. I agree with our comment from our viewer, Purple Side Black Forever here. The great thing is if you hit this panel on your construction site or farm, it's minor cosmetics. And that is true, right? That's a selling point, and that's part of what Elon originally said with the Cybertruck. He wants it to be durable.
And if you hit your farmhand on the farm with the Cybertruck,
you may have to shop for a new one. Yeah. It's going to be minor cosmetics.
Hopefully you aren't hitting a person.
Yeah.
But yeah, in theory, it'd be nice for work tools and other things leaning against it. We'll see how passenger safety and pedestrian safety come into play as more of them end up on the road. Any other thoughts?
In terms of the rusting, I think it's overblown. It's a good ironic headline, and so it gets a lot of press.
Are you surprised that more of them are not wrapped?
I've seen a lot of them wrapped.
Certainly at the beginning, I think most of them will be wrapped just because of the kind of customer that you have at that level, the one that's already paying an extra $20,000 for the pleasure of getting it.
For the foundation.
Yeah.
In fact, Tesla even added, like, you can cash out like 30K referral credits to get pushed up in line. So you burn through a bunch of referral credits and another 20K to get your car. And right. I wouldn't be surprised that that's the case for the entirety of this year of 2024.
Yeah.
So in theory, if you're wrapping it, the speckle drama that people are seeing won't really be a factor.
Goes away.
It depends when those spots are getting there. Some of the theory is it's happening in transport. It's happening from bits from rail wheels. Mm. And it could happen someplace else in the environment of the manufacturer. It'd be sad if you get this wrap and then a few years later you take off the wrap and then
big spots.
What's grown underneath it? Part of the wrapping process, there's a lot of liquid goes on there. Of course, without oxygen, maybe it's okay. You squeeze out those bubbles. Maybe it gets arrested fairly quickly. But it depends when it's happening. And some of the wraps are clear wraps. It'd be really obnoxious to see spots underneath your clear wrap.
Oh, that would suck.
I would hope most of the time when you wrap it like that, certainly clear ones, you detail it first. So you would hope that they would get the spots out.
True.
Now, the real sign will be, like you mentioned earlier, the weather in the Northeast, the snow, the salt on the road. The wraps aren't going to protect you from that because that's going to be underneath.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be in parts where you don't see, where they don't wrap.
And the normal process of a typically painted car is that you get the whole frame, the body in white, and the whole thing gets dipped and painted underneath the car and everything too. If Tesla isn't doing that, you have to wonder about the frame of the vehicle. Those DeLoreans actually, if you want to look into rust with the DeLoreans, they did have frame rust. It wasn't so much the body panels, but the frames were rusting, like any vehicle of that era.
Our friends overseas in Germany have been testing EVs for rust, and they're kicking it back saying EVs are prone to it because the manufacturers tend to put the least amount of paint on they can, and they don't do the undercoating. Anything to save weight, the EV manufacturers don't do. And so it leaves you open to a wider range of corrosion issues.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Cybertruck, we'll certainly bring it up again if we learn more, if we get more details as more folks get Cybertrucks and more potential rusting problems. Hopefully not. So moving on to other potential problems, Rivian, not doing so great right now. It's kind of debatable how you want to say they're doing financially. So they lost, what, like $2 billion last year, which is technically better than the year before. I think the year before they lost over $3 billion. So
positive trend.
They're moving in the right direction. Positive trend. So they lost a lot of money still, and they announced another set of layoffs. So they did. This is what, their third or fourth set of layoffs, something like
that? Yes. Although I will qualify what you said. The numbers I researched before the show, last year's loss ranged anywhere from $5.4 billion to $2
billion. What a range.
So it depends who you're talking to and how they counted the numbers.
I mean, EBITDA is definitely accounting magic to hide numbers.
Oh, yeah. But
that's a big range.
It's a public company. That should be fairly laid out at this point, right?
You would think.
I looked at Business Insider. I looked at Fortune magazine, and they all had different numbers. So
interesting.
They're losing a lot of money.
They talk about losing money per vehicle, right?
Yes, they are.
And that always sounds terrible.
A considerable amount.
Because it's like, oh, maybe you should sell fewer vehicles so that you don't lose as much. But it's not exactly that, right? It's whatever other overhead stuff is going on.
Well, no, there's a fixed cost to building the vehicle, whether you sell one or if you sell 500,000. There's still a fixed cost. The machines cost money, the materials cost money. You know, training the people costs money.
Right. And when you're losing money on every vehicle, the argument of just sell more doesn't always work out. But it must be that, though, right? They must just need to sell more because they're whatever their main capital expenses can. Yeah, well, they need to be actually making money, right?
They've got their Hail Mary coming up on March 7th, and that'll be the brand new baby brother to the R1S. It's going to be the R2. And it's roughly the size of a Maverick or a Santa Fe.
The R2. They need to have a subversion called the D2 so that they can have an R2-D2.
Yeah, R2-D2 would be great. I think that's coming for sure. I just happened to look up numbers. I saw last year, the second quarter, they announced they were losing $32,000 to $33,000 per vehicle.
Ooh, that hurts.
However, in the fourth quarter of last year, they were losing $43,000 per vehicle.
Well, they're in good company. Ford loses about $30,000 per Lightning they sell.
Yeah, but you assume Ford is making money on their other vehicles, right?
Ford doesn't lose money on every car they sell. Most of the cars they sell, they make money. Rivian being a company that only sells two models. And they're both EVs, they definitely need to work on figuring this out. I guess part of it is expenditures. And so they're doing this layoff. The layoff is 10% of the salaried employees. So I think the numbers were something over 16,000 employees, but 10% of their salaried employees are going to lay off only a few hundred people. So most of their employees are not salaried. That's going to be like your manufacturing folks, your guys physically building the cars.
Yeah, this strikes me as a very focused layoff.
So, all right, they're trying to reduce costs that way. What can they do to increase costs? Because what I worry about here, Mike, is, and we'll talk about the R2, making a newer car that costs less, and it's certainly making a new model, as we saw with Tesla. Whenever you make a new model, you lose a lot of money, right? Like, it's hard to make a new model. You've got to do all the tooling, all the production lines, all this figuring all that crap out. And so you don't make money right away. You make money eventually on those models as you get costs down.
But I think it's all about positioning, because
there's
been a lot of talk online about this being the Model 3 moment for Rivian. And the idea is you get a model out there that's cheap enough that the masses can afford it. And now you can start actually getting real volume. If you look at what they're going to do, they've got a brand new factory they're bringing online for the R2 in Georgia with a capability of 400,000 vehicles per year. Now, that's not what they're selling today by any stretch, but they've got a vision and they're going for it.
Their cars are Model S, Model X range prices right now.
Yes. So they're literally trying to emulate the Model 3, where it's a much cheaper version of an EV that they can crank out in high numbers.
Okay. So when I look at it though, the Model 3 was the rocket ship for Tesla to be huge, to be the size that it is. However, was Tesla losing money on every Model S that they sold before the Model 3 came out? I would assume not.
Well, I'm not sure I'd assume that.
So the history was on the Roadster, the first whatever 500 Roadsters, they were definitely losing money on those. And that had a big drama because that actually raised prices on people that had already paid ahead of time. The Model S, it depends how you look at it, right? I don't remember exactly what year, but Tesla eventually became profitable. So if overall the company is losing money, you can make the argument, oh, they're losing money on every vehicle they sell because overall they lost money, right? But I think in reality, they designed the Model S in a way that they could make money, but they're also spending a lot of money. So that's not an easy way to look at it.
Sure. That's fair. So it may not be that they're actually losing money per car. It's more if you look at how much they made from the cars and how much the company
is costing,
lost, is costing. That's how they're doing the math.
Actually, if you make the tie-in, Rivian is having these layoffs. Tesla, that year that they became profitable, part of the reason they became profitable is they literally decimated the employees. They laid off 10% of the company just to become profitable that year. Basically, they figured out who's making the most money, and those are the people. They tend to be manager-type people that were laid off.
More senior folks.
Or people that were going to get certain benefits or whatever. And often, a lot of those people end up getting hired back, but they get hired back horizontally in a similar but different position, but their benefits kind of reset as opposed to getting the credit for the time they've already spent with the company.
Sure.
So the strategic thing about, okay, we need to save money so that we can be profitable. Rivian could be doing something similar here.
Sure. Before we went live, we were looking at the stock price because we were curious. And I just, to preface, this is not financial advice. Do not use this to do any decisions. It's not what we do. But we looked at it and it's like Rivian stock has basically plateaued. When they first IPO'd, they peaked. They were like $130 a share or something. Right now they're at like $10 a share. They're like as the bottom of the bottom. So the question is, are they going to rebound? Or are they going to pull through? This might be a time to invest if you believe in that company, if you believe in their product, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about. If you look at them, they started pretty high. And why? Because people are like, this is the next Tesla.
The new Tesla.
And the people that missed the boat on Tesla, or even the people that did well, here was another opportunity. Right. But unless you look close, it's pretty monotonic, downward slide. Right. But I think Rivian as a company, I still think that they can do fairly well. They have backing from customers like Amazon. And I think they have a compelling product. Many people that want EV trucks will say that the Rivian is the proper truck right now, better than the Ford and Cybertruck. It's kind of a separate thing. And
it's probably what I would buy if I wanted a truck, right?
Right.
As much as I prefer Tesla's vehicles and a lot of aspects of Tesla, if I wanted a truck, Rivian to me is the EV truck because it's a more traditional truck.
Now, I tend to think that they have a better chance than, say, Lucid. And I'd like Lucid to be successful, but they have a very... trying to have a very high-end kind of niche product. And if you look at them, they're very volatile. You know,
you should contrast it with the Tesla stock, which is at 191 right now, although it's down from what it's been. It's still pretty high.
Yeah, but Tesla's a whole other animal when it comes to stock. Honestly speaking, when Elon's involved, stock prices are not based on fundamentals. It's based on potential of Elon, right? Like, there's people are buying into what Elon's going to do.
Distortion field.
I feel like Lucid and Rivian are going to be closer to more traditional companies. The funny thing is Tesla made a market, right? They were a market maker, which is very hard to do. It's ridiculously impressive that they did it. And that's why they went from nothing pretty steadily and then kind of exploded as they became super successful. Now they're at a different part of their company, right? Tesla's got to figure out what other products, how do we expand? How do we grow? They're giving us all those offers now. Hey, you want to transfer your FSD? Hey, you want to transfer your supercharging?
You notice you saved your Tesla you're looking at. Let's make a deal on that.
As long as you do it by the end of the quarter, right? They're running quarter by quarter, it's like ship as many cars as you can. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how the market shakes up. The CEO of Rivian made some comments I saw in one article where basically he's blaming a lot of it on the global macroeconomic climate.
That's always a factor.
And the fact that interest rates are so high, right? So one of the problems is when your car is really expensive and interest rates are high, you're going to sell way fewer cars. And that's why Tesla cut Model S, Model X prices by a lot, right? Folks like me aren't happy because, man, they dropped the MSRP by $40,000 in a few months, which really hurt when I paid the higher price not long before. But Tesla is able to do that because they're profitable, they make so much money, and their margins are so great. Rivian doesn't have those margins yet. They don't have their Model 3 to make that money. So it's not so easy for them. They can't just cut $40,000 off their sticker price and sell when interest rates are high. So it'll be interesting to see if interest rates come down, will they rebound? Or is it really going to be this R2, which Mike was talking about? But it just kind of looks like an R1S, but smaller, right? It still looks like an SUV.
I would put it into a midsize, maybe a bit smaller.
It's not like a sedan. It's high up like an SUV.
No, it's high up like an SUV. And they're saying between $40,000 and $60,000, which is kind of a sweet spot, I think.
$40,000 to $60,000 MSRP-ish. Yeah, that could be interesting.
That puts it square against a Model Y.
I have to say, I have a friend right now that just test drove a Model Y and he's interested in it. But his wife was complaining she wanted the air-conditioned seats, right, that the refresh Model 3 has, that the Y doesn't have yet. And so I threw out there like, well, did you look at the Rivians, considering she wanted a bigger SUV? And the comment was, yeah, it's too expensive though. Yeah, it really is. But $40,000 to $60,000 one. But by then, the Model Y will be refreshed, so then that's the obvious winner.
Rivian's trying hard, because I spent the last 2 weeks looking at Rivian pretty seriously. And yeah, the prices are high, I'll grant you that. But if you really wanted to get in one, you can get into a lease on the Rivian pretty cheap right now. And the thing about the lease on the Rivian is they make it dead simple at the end to buy it out if you want to. Unlike Tesla that says, nope, you got to give us the car back no matter what.
That's still ridiculous. So silly.
The fact you can't buy your car back after the end of a lease.
Yeah, that's some ridiculous hubris on Tesla's part.
Maybe 5 years ago when they were going to do the robotaxi, that's fine. But now I think it's just a stupid idea.
That was their argument then. Reality should have caught up with whoever makes that decision.
Apparently not.
And made it a little more simple, because that's just dumb.
And the discussions on some of the other forums is very much that. The fact that you can lease the Rivian, get into it at a low payment or relatively low payment. And at 3 year mark, you can buy it really easy. You just walk in, sign the papers and out you go. No sweat.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm still in the camp. So I've never leased a car. I've only purchased a few cars in my life. And so I've never leased one. But I have to say, when it comes to an EV, I would strongly consider it. Like, from a technology standpoint,
yeah, things change so fast.
I feel like you should lease an EV and you don't want to buy it, right? Like, it really is. You want the next tech, you want the new tech, the next gen. So I get it. People complain that they can't buy outright their leases from Tesla, but I'd rather get a new Tesla every 3 years than buy out the lease, if it makes sense.
The other issue was that the Tesla lease terms were terrible. I mean, like, the price was ridiculous.
They were terrible. Sure. Well, they still are, but they're still not much better.
Back in 2016, when I put down a deposit on a Model 3, and I wanted to go ahead and drive electric at that point, and the Model 3 wasn't going to be available for a couple of years. So I leased a BMW i3, and BMW made it very easy. They're quite cheap. There was a federal and a state tax rebate that I was able to get. And also, you know, he had the sense that BMW was selling these cars even cheaper because they needed these California zero emission credits so that they can continue selling their ICE vehicles. So that made perfect sense to lease that car, and they made it very, very cheap. And I did get some crap from Tesla folks, so why didn't you lease a Model S? Well, this BMW I was able to lease for around $200 a month, whereas the Model S was $1,000 a month, which was absolutely ridiculous, especially since I only drove maybe 10 miles a week. So that would have made no sense at all. And then, of course, not just expensive, but the terms were just a pain in the butt, and I wasn't sure about how the return would go. But I really enjoyed leasing that BMW i3. I had it long enough that I thought it was cool, but I was ready to be done with it when the Model 3 came, and Model 3 is definitely the superior vehicle.
Sure. For the amount that I drive, I probably shouldn't have purchased my car, but it's so much fun. I love it. Plaid is just great.
Well, that's really the bottom line, though, isn't it?
Right. So that's not a smart financial decision, but man, it's such a great car. I would do it again. So Rivian losing money, doing some layoffs, but not necessarily out yet. They're thinking they're going to make profitability at some point in the not too distant future.
They're going to try like hell.
So we'll see how that goes. Competition is good. So we want competition in the market. It'll help drive innovation both for Tesla and for other companies. So let's move on. Hydrogen. So we talked about it some last week, but now we've got a little bit more to discuss on hydrogen. Right. So Doug, why don't you jump in and tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Well, we want to clarify a couple things. Last episode, Mike brought up something with the hydrogen fuel cell partnership. I just mentioned that they're related to CARB. I wanted to clarify that a little bit. The hydrogen fuel cell partnership is a public-private partnership. They were founded back in 1999. And at the time, it was the California fuel cell partnership. And at that time, what was going on? GM had recently killed the electric car, right? The EV1 was killed. And part of the reason that CARB got rid of the EV mandate back then, and that's what killed the car, was that California is no longer mandating it. And part of that was there's this new technology and there'll be hydrogen vehicles. And so this group, which is basically an industry group that is mostly oil companies,
go figure,
and a couple manufacturers, so Toyota and Honda, were there, and then also a cryogen type company like Air Liquide or something, the kind of companies that can benefit from transporting cryogenic fluids around. Those are the kind of companies that are in this partnership. So I just want to clarify what that is. So it's not just CARB. CARB is the California Air Resources Board. They're a part of what's now called the Hydrogen Fuel Cell Partnership. So that's the government side of it, but there are also these other industry companies that form it. It's funny, we talked about this. Currently, I'm staying at a place in Mountain View, and in the parking lot, I see a Toyota Mirai, and I'm just thinking about, oh, what is this guy doing? How is he able to fuel that thing? And I did search around. There are a couple places within a few miles that you could fill up hydrogen, but it just feels so handcuffed, right? All these people in this fuel cell partnership, we had a little bit of a back and forth. Like, I tend to think that they're not so benevolent. I tend to think that, especially the oil companies, they're there to slow down EVs and basically things that cut them out of the loop. They want to make sure they're in there and continue to be able to sell you a product. But I think on the benevolent side is the customer, right? The person that thought, oh, I'm doing something good for the environment by buying this hydrogen vehicle. And organizations like the Hydrogen Fuel Cell Partnership, most of what they're about is education, educating the consumer about the wonders of this technology. And I feel like those poor folks we're duped, you know?
Yeah.
Duped is the right word. After our discussion in the last podcast about the hydrogens, I did some poking around. And I do an annual road trip to Arizona. I go to Phoenix, I turn left, I go down to Tucson, and we kind of hang around down there and we come back. And what I didn't realize until I started looking at a map, there is literally no hydrogen refill stations outside of California in Arizona or anywhere else I could really find. It's very much a California thing. And even where I'm at in Orange County, there are 12 or so stations around me, five of which are dead. The others seem to be alive, according to the map. But once I get out to Riverside County, which is maybe 30 miles down the road, there's nothing there. You buy this car, you're literally pinned to the city you're in because you don't have the range to get to the next city where the hydrogen refuel stations are. Like San Jose, for example.
Now, is this before or after they close all these stations?
This was before. This was before. I was poking around on Reddit, and there were people that bought their cars a year ago, and they were wanting to go to Arizona, and they were being told, don't, you got no place to fill it here. And what came up this week is there was an interview with a couple that had bought a brand new Toyota, and they can't fill it. The one station that was near them has stopped. It's gone. It's part of that Shell shutdown. And Toyota won't buy the car back, even though they can't fill it. But Toyota is giving them a hybrid to use until some indeterminate date. I'm not sure how long that's going to go on.
I looked into it a little bit too, and it looks like a Toyota Mirai, which I think the MSRP was somewhere around 63.
Was it that expensive?
It's 60, but then they're giving like a 40K discount or incentive. And then also they supposedly would give you free fuel for a year or two. But of course, like the actual hydrogen itself is almost $20 per kilogram. So it's not cheap fuel. So that promise never panned out. I think the thing about buying the car back, I think that's definitely what all the manufacturers should do. They should just take it back, eat it. But that admits it's done. That admits defeat. In Japan, they're still trying to push it. I think in part of that's because of the political power of a company like Toyota. Toyota pushed their hydrogen, and they also had their hybrid synergy drive for the Prius. And that's a lucrative technology for them that they licensed to other manufacturers. It's funny, too, because the hybrid was basically the answer to the death of the electric car. It was the electric car that you don't have to plug in, right? With terrible marketing, right? Like, but essentially, all the energy for that comes from gas. But that worked great for them. I mean, Prius is a brand that makes Toyota a lot of money, and they don't want
to upset the apple cart.
It's the innovator's dilemma, right? They don't want to stop that gravy train. They want to keep that going for as long as possible. And part of that distraction is the hydrogen stuff that I guess they've invested in with that Toyota Mirai. Honda had the Honda Clarity. I don't even think they make that anymore, but the Clarity was supposed to be this purpose-built hydrogen vehicle. And it was the first hydrogen vehicle that you saw reviewers driving. And then after years of this hydrogen stuff dragging, they came out with a hybrid version and an EV version. And I remember the hydrogen people being so upset that there was a battery EV version of the Clarity. But I think they probably canceled it either 2021 or 2022. They don't make it anymore. So
GM was part of that big effort for some years, except last year in 2023, when they rolled out their new game plan, hydrogen wasn't on the map at all.
And it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
GM's basically said they've walked away from it.
For passenger vehicles, it's a dead end technology. That was obvious to a lot of us then. And the people that promoted it back then, they'd make the comparisons and they would always talk about EVs then versus hydrogen vehicles in the future, not thinking that EVs will
get better,
advance. And the cost of batteries has gone way down compared to what it was back in the early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
And hydrogen hasn't really, like, how efficient a proton exchange membrane is, how efficient electrolysis is. Those things haven't changed much because those are slightly engineering problems, but they're also fundamental physics problems.
What they need is they need to convince Apple to create a product where they can put trillions of dollars into research and development, right? Because batteries became so cheap because of consumer electronics primarily, and it accelerated it. And now it's like, yeah, but you don't have a consumer electronics growth market where you're doing research on like proton exchange membranes and electrolysis, right?
So the research for that was the space industry.
Right.
That is a end of research where things are very expensive and it's governments and the ubiquity is few and far between. Certainly consumer electronics. I mean, basically the Tesla Roadster was made out of what? It was laptop batteries.
Yeah.
And why? Because there's already this whole consumer demand that brought the cost down. Ironically, solar panels, for example, are a lot cheaper than they used to be. Because of the flat screen TV industry, right?
Yeah, right. Same manufacturing tech.
Exactly. People want these large flat panel TV sets. Well, guess what? A similar manufacturing equipment is needed to make large solar panels. And so that's brought down the cost of solar panels. That kind of synergy isn't going to exist for hydrogen. And even if it did, again, there's fundamental physics limitations that aren't really going to change anytime soon.
Please stop investing in hydrogen. Fuel cell cars does not make sense for passenger vehicles.
Or if you're going to do it, spend your own money. Okay. Right. Tesla installed their own charging infrastructure and they did it themselves, right? Shell, all these other companies, Toyota, they basically wanted us
government handouts to do it.
Johnny Public and their tax dollars to pay for all this hydrogen infrastructure, this new hydrogen economy. I'm like, dude, if this is actually going to be profitable, then you guys take the financial risk. You guys put the money in, and they're very reticent to do so. And obviously, Shell left. We got to be somewhat fair. I think part of the issue was that there were some parts that they needed for consumer level fueling that just weren't available. And so they couldn't repair their pumps. And after a couple months of them not being operational, okay, let's just shut them down. But again, the demand is so low. But if you're the one holding the bag, you're the one that bought one of these Toyota Mirais, you're kind of stuck.
And they give some rough equivalents there. Earlier, Doug said a kilogram of hydrogen is about $20 or something. That kilogram of hydrogen is equivalent of like a gallon of gas. So that's not even worth it from a consumer standpoint.
That's a huge disparity.
It's silly, but it is what it is. So Toyota is not refunding customers, but they are giving major discounts and offering cars temporarily.
Hybrids, temporarily.
Yeah, temporarily letting them use hybrids. I'm assuming free of charge.
That's what the article said.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
But even though they've got the free car, they are still being made to make payments on the brick that they can't drive, which is the killer.
Right, exactly. That's some interesting accounting they've got going on there. Okay, so another thing we did want to mention, this is something a lot of folks are waiting on and interested in. Performance Model 3. We finally had a sighting. We've finally seen it. Sort of, maybe.
Maybe. It's been, maybe.
Maybe. Rumors. I'll throw this over to rumors. Mike. So where have we seen it? What have we seen? What do we know?
It was overseas. Spain, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Not much is known. It was camouflaged, as you would expect. But there might be some bolstered seats in there for those of us that like to play high Gs around turns, which would be nice. Keep your butt planted better. Mm-hmm. But it's all rumor at this point.
Sure. So how about, why is the Performance Model 3 so sought after? Why do you think people are really interested in this car?
Why do people buy a Plaid?
Because they have way too much money.
Well, that's probably one reason.
Oh, this is a cheaper Plaid, right?
My opinion is it is going to be just that. It will be a cheaper Plaid. It may actually share some of the Plaid DNA if Tesla really wanted to amp it up. And the fact that they brought out the Model 3 Highland as it is, extended range, and they said, yeah, we're not going to give you a performance just yet. That makes me think they're really working on it for some reason. And making it with Plaid DNA would be a good reason for that. At least one can hope. It'd be awesome if they would use some of the Plaid engineering, like the motors, for example. Now, are we ever going to see carbon brakes on the Model 3? Yeah, maybe not.
What were they already doing with the Performance Model 3s?
There wasn't a lot of difference between a Performance Model 3 and an Extended Range Model 3.
Yeah. In fact, it was just a software switch, right?
Yeah, it was software.
It was software, and the sway bar was a little beefier. The springs were a little beefier. Although I've been told in the recent vintages of the Model 3, that wasn't the case. But in the beginning, it was.
Part of what's shown up is some Model 3s with some camouflage on them that have some fancier seats. Some slightly better bolstering. I don't think the Performance Model 3 from the last couple of years had any different seats.
Seats were the same.
Or any real different interior stuff. So perhaps that's something we can look forward to.
Model 3 performance wish list would be Plaid motors, Plaid brakes, and air suspension. That would be a killer package.
So just to throw out there, the badge is not actually a Plaid badge. As a Plaid owner, I have to defend us Plaid owners.
You have to defend yourself, yes.
It is a ludicrous badge. So it is actually from Spaceballs, where they had the ludicrous speed.
Yeah.
That is the badge. So it's similar to a Plaid badge, but it's different colors.
Yeah, it simulates a sort of Star Wars jumping to hyperspace effect of the streaming lights coming towards you. And ludicrous is supposed to be a step below Plaid, right?
Right.
Ludicrous speed, and then Plaid was what came after that because you tore through hyperspace or something. Right?
Yeah. And ludicrous is also what they used to call the Model S's highest performance, like when you had...
You could pay for that. That was an extra couple thousand to buy.
Ludicrous mode. Now, any guesses when we might see this actually get released? And is it going to be one of those fun, it's in Europe way before it's in the US things again?
Probably.
I expect this year. They probably won't tell you. Because they don't want to not sell cars and they don't want people waiting around for something. But if they're already doing some promotional material type stuff, it'll probably be available in Europe fairly soon, given that the updated Model 3 was available in Europe before us, and then we'll get it, I would say this year, probably by Q2, I would guess.
You think that fast?
Why not? End of Q2. So I think it'll happen this summer.
Parts?
What are the parts, really?
Well, it depends what they change.
Apparently, they added to the parts catalog. So there's going to be carbon fiber spoiler.
Okay.
They have a ludicrous badge that'll be above the dual motor location. And there's also two new wheel designs, I believe.
50.
Nope, not necessarily two. There's several new wheel designs. The repair manual has 5 different wheel options listed. So it'll be interesting to see. Maybe those will all be available right away. Maybe they won't all be available right away.
All that is cosmetic kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the motor and suspension.
I'm sure that's already in place. It's just the same motors. They'll just allow more to get pushed out. The batteries might be a little different because they might be a chemistry that's better with power. But I don't expect it to be any different. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did a stealth or sleeper version also, where you can get essentially the Performance 3 without
the badging,
without the spoiler and the fancy colored calipers and whatnot.
I wish I had fancy colored calipers. No, I'm just kidding.
You want the carbon disc brake kit. I know what you want.
Yeah. I don't think it's actually worth it for everyday driving, right? Carbon ceramic brakes are not ideal for regular road driving.
They need to get hot before they even work, right? And if you're always on regen braking, what sense do they make?
They're for track or for bragging points.
Exactly, for track.
Or for rear-ending the guy in front of you because they're cold.
Well,
right. I will say, though, the software unlock for 200 miles an hour for a Plaid requires you to buy that kit. Or you got to go aftermarket and kind of do things you're not supposed to do that I won't talk about on the show right now. Anyway, I want to thank all you folks for hanging out with us. As always, like and subscribe. We appreciate it. Keep comments coming. If you want to be part of the conversation, feel free to leave comments in the chat. And you can always go over to TeslaMotorsClub.com, become a supporting member. That helps out.
Please do.
Thanks to our producers and all the folks helping us behind the scenes, Danny and Adam. We'll see you next time.
Laters.
Have a good one.
Peace.